Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. And it's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wondery Country, I'm Luxidam Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap.
Well, what the hell have they been doing for the last two and a half years? So far as the Australian government is concerned, the minister, when she sees the ambassador, should tell him that he's going home.
More than 2 years after Israeli forces killed Australian aid worker Zomi Frankem and her colleagues in Gaza, the IDF has ended its investigation, clearing its personnel of any criminal wrongdoing. Today you're going to hear from independent UN Commissioner Christa Doty, who wants the government to kick out the Israeli ambassador. It's one of a couple really powerful insights you're going to hear about today. We're also going to look at a speech in Parliament yesterday that shone a spotlight on veterans' healthcare.
I'm begging you, Prime Minister. We are already suffering enough. Drop the bloody cap. Drop it, mate. It is so unfair.
So what is Senator Jackie Lambie calling for? That conversation is coming up. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. It's good to have you with us for the second last Breakfast Wrap episode for the week. A huge week of federal politics covering all the machinations in Canberra with politicians back for the parliamentary sitting week. But we started this morning overseas with huge news out of Israel. The Israel Defence Forces clearing its personnel of any criminal wrongdoing in that April 2024 strike. They hit a World Central Kitchen convoy in Gaza, where Australian woman Zomi Frankem was travelling with her colleagues. She was killed along with six others. The charity has condemned the finding. They've called it wrong and painful. But the IDF has said that there'll be no need for criminal proceedings. It said that there were serious failures which led soldiers to falsely identify a Hamas fighter while travelling in the convoy, which prompted their attack, killing the seven humanitarian workers. But it said the decisions of the commanders did not raise reasonable suspicion of criminal misconduct. Now, one of the lawyers representing the family of one of the Brits killed in that strike in 2024, Fawz Khan, told us this morning that the sequence of events that day really do demand further inquiry.
To hit one vehicle after the authorities have been formally notified, that itself is gross negligence. Let us say, for example, we can write that one off as an accident. It cannot be said that the same applies to the second vehicle, and more so less to the third vehicle. This is a systematic annihilation of those who would help Palestinians.
So this morning, the attention came back to Canberra, because in response to this, the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, put out a strong statement. She said she'd call in the Israeli ambassador, Hillel Newman, labelling the decision outrageous and the timing offensive to Zomi Frankem's loved ones and all Australians. When we spoke to the government's assistant minister, Julian Hill, this morning, he explained why.
The government was given a few minutes' notice, and I'll say clearly, it's difficult not to see that this is a gratuitous insult to Zomi Frankem's family, to her memory, to her colleagues, indeed to Australia, that this announcement was made on World Humanitarian Day. It beggars belief.
You can hear more from Julian Hill's interview on Radio National Breakfast on ABC Listen. So this news was part of the largest information dump the IDF has done since the war in Gaza. And it's part of a tranche of really significant news, because the IDF has announced that it will actually launch its first criminal probe of the war. It has conceded that it did open fire on a five-year-old Palestinian girl by the name of Hind Rajab, killing her, her family, and the medics that were sent to rescue them. Now, this was also in early 2024. Hind Rajab and her family were escaping Gaza City when their car was hit by the IDF. What followed was a drawn-out attempted rescue effort. liaised with the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, who worked across multiple hours to deconflict a route for paramedics. It was a huge story at the time. It was eventually turned into an award-winning film. This morning, Hindra Jab's grandmother, her namesake, Hindra Jab, said the family is really sceptical of an Israeli investigation.
We, as Hind Rajab's family, we do not trust the judiciary of the State of Israel. We hope that justice will be from the entire world. We appeal to the international justice system as a whole.
So there's widespread scepticism, outrage from governments, pain from colleagues at World Central Kitchen, and as you're about to hear, real questions around what the Australian government should do next. Our whole team hit the phones this morning to gather more details and answer these questions, and our executive producer, Eleni Soltis, landed a really insightful voice. Chris Sidoti is a commissioner on the UN Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory in Israel. He spoke with Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast this morning, and she asked him about the Israeli investigation.
This was an internal investigation by the Israeli military. What do you make of these findings that have been released so far?
Well, first, it's actually good to get some findings. The Israeli military constantly announces internal investigations and then we hear nothing more. At least here in five cases, they have announced the results of the investigations. But I've got to ask, what the hell have they been doing? These cases are old. The Hind Rajab case, another one of the five, occurred 2.5 years ago. The World Central Kitchen killings occurred over 2 years ago. And only now are we being told that these matters, some of these matters, are going to be referred to criminal investigation. Well, what the hell have they been doing for the last two and a half years? There's no confidence either in the appropriateness, the thoroughness of the internal investigations, or of any criminal prosecutions that may flow. We don't know whether it'll get to the point of criminal prosecution. There'll be further delay as the criminal investigators do their work. And so justice, if it's ever going to come, is a long time off.
Separate to this internal investigation by the Israeli military, there was an Australian review conducted by Air Chief Marshal retired Mark Binskin that recommended that Israel apologise and pay reparations to Zoe Frankham's family. The IDF's internal investigation, this latest investigation, has not recommended that. What do you think of that?
Well, the review conducted by the Australian appointee was itself a very soft touch, I have to say. The recommendations that were made, apology, reparations, were the very least that could have been expected. And yet the Israeli authorities are not even responding to those. It's a ridiculous situation. That's why we need the International Criminal Court conducting the investigations that it's conducting. And we have to look to the International Criminal Court for justice in these cases.
The Foreign Affairs Minister, Senator Penny Wong, says she's outraged by the decision of this internal Israeli military investigation and that the Israeli ambassador to Australia, Hillel Newman, will be called in. What options are now left for Zomi Frankham's family and the Australian government?
Well, so far as the Australian government is concerned, the minister, when she sees the ambassador, should tell him that he's going home. I don't support breaking diplomatic relations with Israel. I don't support the closing of embassies. But this bloke is clearly an unacceptable representative so far as Australia is concerned, and he should be sent home. He has interfered in Australia's internal politics. He has been offensive in dealing with Australian members of the flotilla that tried to reach Gaza with humanitarian aid. And again, his government now has failed Australian citizens. So he should be told that he's going home. The family must continue to advocate on behalf of those that were killed, including their daughter. They've been fabulous in how they have taken up this case and refused to allow it to drop. But I think that they need to act with the support of the Australian government to insist that the recommendations from the Australian Review, apology and reparations, are the very least that should be done by the Israeli authorities. But again, it's through the International Criminal Court that we're likely to see justice, not through the Israeli courts.
This was not the only IDF finding overnight. It says it's completed reviews of 150 incidents of troop conduct in Gaza and made decisions on 5 prominent cases. The Israeli military has confirmed for the first time that it did open fire on a car carrying a 5-year-old Palestinian girl, Hind Rajab, who was killed along with 6 relatives in Gaza in 2024. How significant is this development?
I hesitate in knowing how to answer. It is significant. But Hind Rajab was killed 2.5 years ago. There has been no incident in the war in Gaza since October 2023 that has been more widely investigated externally, including by our Commission of Inquiry, where we found very clearly that the Israeli forces were responsible for the killing of this little girl and members of her family, and 2 medics who tried to reach her to provide assistance to her and the family. The organisation Forensic Architecture, established by a Jewish Israeli person, uses digital evidence extremely well. They counted 335 bullet holes in that family's vehicle. Why is it that only now this matter is being referred for criminal investigation, when we have known more about that incident than any other incident in Gaza in the last 3 years? Why are they taking so long? The length of time taken, the nature of the internal investigation, the fact that only 2 of these 5 very serious, well-documented cases are being referred for criminal investigation leaves me entirely cynical about any prospect of justice coming out of the internal processes of the Israeli system.
Chris Sidoti, a commissioner on the UN Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory and Israel. Now, we also contacted the Foreign Minister Penny Wong, Mark Binskin, who conducted the Australian Review, Zomi Frankum's family, and the World Central Kitchen. They weren't available for an interview. Tomorrow, on Radio National Breakfast and The Breakfast Wrap, you will hear from the Israeli ambassador to Australia, Hillel Newman. But before we get to that, more reaction to the news today, because as it's been right across the week, our Parliament House studio has been full of political guests right throughout the morning. Today, that included the Greens leader, Senator Larissa Waters, who had this to say on Israel's decision to clear its personnel of any criminal wrongdoing in relation to the death of Zomi Frankum and her colleagues.
Well, it is absolutely outrageous that after 2 years of investigating, the Israeli authorities have cleared themselves of any wrongdoing, despite the deliberate targeting and murder of Australian aid worker Zomi Frankum and her aid colleagues, and I might add 500 other aid and humanitarian workers since this genocide began. And I think it's just very clear that strong words are not enough to deter this sort of conduct. And this means precisely that the Australian government needs to do more than just issue some strongly worded statements. They need to sanction the state of Israel and they need to make sure that we are not involved in a 2-way arms trade, which we are at the moment.
Should the Israeli ambassador to Australia be sent home?
Look, I think that should be on the table. He's been saying there's nothing to see here for ever since this conflict began. But it's clear that Australians feel like there is a genocide here and they want more done. I think the strong words from the minister are, I appreciate that she's saying them, but I'd like to see some action and some justice for Zomi Frankum and her family. They've been waiting for so long, they've had no apology, and our government needs to do more than just be disappointed and say this is an insult. They need to demand that we sanction Israel and that we stop giving them arms and being involved in that 2-way arms trade.
Returning to other issues of federal politics, the government has struck deals with the Coalition on reforms to the NDIS and gambling regulation this week. Do the Greens regret not being able to influence those government proposals?
Well, look, it's a great week to be a gambling corporation, Sally, or a gas corporation, because they've been let completely off the hook here. The Labor government chose to work with the Liberals to cut the biggest cut to a support package this century, cutting 241,000 people off the NDIS instead of raising revenue from taxing the gas corporations. And they chose to do the weakest possible reform on gambling advertising when they could have chosen to work with the Greens plans and implement the Murphy gambling ad recommendation reforms, and had a total ban on gambling ads, like 77% of Australians actually want. They could have chosen to tax the gas corporations with the support of the Greens to raise revenue so that they didn't have to cut so many billions out of the backs of disabled people who deserve support. They're making choices to prioritise big corporations every time, and this week they've done it in spades, and it's absolutely disgusting that these big corporations make donations to the Labor and Liberal parties, and then it seems they get their policy agenda legislated. Parliament should work for people, not vested interests, and certainly not political donors.
Your party was clear from the outset that it wouldn't support the government's NDIS overhaul. Would it have been better to have secured changes to it rather than allowing the coalition to be in the box seat for those negotiations?
Look, Sally, the government chose to cut the NDIS. The Greens have resisted those cuts, and we have worked alongside the disability community, and we secured an inquiry to expose what this will mean for people. This will mean that kids won't get the support they need. They might have to come out of mainstream schools, like a mum that I was talking to on the weekend said. It might mean that parents now need to stop full-time or part-time work so that they can provide that care to their kids themselves. This will have serious human impacts. And this government chose to do that.
Senator Larissa Waters, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Sally.
For the allegations of genocide, those allegations against Israel are currently before the International Court of Justice. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu remains in place over alleged war crimes. Israel denies those allegations.
Sally Sara there with Senator Larissa Waters, leader of the Greens, talking about Gaza and Israel's investigation into the killing of Australian aid worker Zomi Frankum and her colleagues, and also gambling and the NDIS. Well, it's not often that we play large chunks of audio from Parliament House, but this one is worth leaning in for, because what Senator Jackie Lambie shared with the Chamber yesterday was extraordinarily powerful, and it ushered this response from the Senate President.
Thank you, Senator Lambie. Can I, just before I shift the call, thank you for sharing your personal experience and acknowledge your pain. Thank you.
The Honourable Sue Lyons there. So Jackie Lambie is a former Australian Army Corporal and Tasmanian Senator, and what she has demanded is for the federal government to drop a $5,000 annual limit on allied health expenditure for servicemen and women. Here is part of her five-minute speech, and you can hear why she is so impassioned by this.
Last night, I told Kate's story, a female veteran who waited for 3 years to get surgery for vaginal prolapse. Why did she wait so long? Because she couldn't find a gynaecologist who was happy with the low prices DVA had to pay. If I didn't have a good job, that could have been me. About 6 months ago, my vagina started to prolapse. This is an injury that is directly connected to my back injuries from my time in the army. My vagina was collapsing and 3 months later it was taking my bladder with it. I put my claim into DVA over a month ago, crickets. No duty of care from the Department of Veterans Affairs, absolute zero. So I came to Canberra to get the operation. I paid the $7,000 so they wouldn't end up like Kate. If I was like the majority of female veterans, I would have had to wait for DVA to approve my claim, and then I would have to search and hope like hell that there would be a gynaecologist who would accept the low rate that was paid by the Department of Veterans Affairs. The awful thing about this condition is that it also affects your bladder. A crucial treatment for post-prolapse surgery is physiotherapy, but female veterans can only get a maximum of 4 physio treatments, and they have to fight their way through a mountain of forms to get that. Even though the experts say that the recommended amount is between 5 and 12 appointments at the very least, how would that go under the cap for our veterans, let alone our females? I would like to ask the Prime Minister, I'm asking you once more, I'm begging you, Prime Minister, we are already suffering enough. Drop the bloody cap.
And that is the Tasmanian Senator, Jackie Lambie, in Parliament yesterday. The Senator might be the loudest voice on this issue right now, but it is something that others have been trying to raise for a while. Lani LJ Keneally is the chair of the group Women's Veterans Australia, and she was listening back to the Senator's speech and shared her thoughts with Sally.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd have to acknowledge the courage, the absolute courage of Senator Lambie to stand up and share such a personal account to kind of reflect the broader concerns that sit within the women veteran community around access to healthcare, around, you know, continuative care when we, you know, with regards to reproductive rights. And I think it speaks to the broader issue about the allied cap and how that's been rolled out in such a hasty way with very little thought to the effect that has on veterans.
The government says it's introducing the $5,000 cap from July next year. It says it would help limit unnecessary over-servicing. People requiring support above the cap will still be able to apply for more funding. What effect will that have in your view?
Straight up, imposing the cap, you know, automatically makes the veteran community feel like that we were doing something wrong, seeking treatment for conditions that, as a result of our service. The fact that the cap was rolled out with absolutely zero communication about how it will be applied, you know, that's had a really big impact, and we've seen that play out over the last few days in the veteran community. I think long term, like if the cap is to go ahead, you know, I have concerns about people delaying care, not accessing care, worrying, you know, not all veterans, you know, are capable or you know, particularly in the mental state to kind of go onto MyGov, assess where they're at with their treatment. So it has a huge impact on the veteran community. And quite frankly, it's just the government, you know, putting the burden on the veterans to go after the shonky operators that have been, you know, over-servicing in some regards.
Senator Lambie told Parliament the Department of Veterans Affairs has what's known as a Statement of Principles, SOP, for erectile dysfunction, but none for vaginal prolapse. Are there still inequalities in the care system between male and female veterans and those serving?
It's because the military is inherently being built on a male model. So we kind of understand where we've come from, but what we haven't done is evolve as we've increased our women's representation. And it speaks to a much larger issue. You know, I have to call it out that post the Royal Commission, the leadership from Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary with respect to getting after the women's issues, which is inclusive of the health issues, has been nothing short of inspirational, particularly for a woman veteran of myself for 34 years. Who worked in defence trying to bring out reform. You know, I've been highly encouraged by the work that the department has done on consulting on all of the recommendations that directly affect women veterans that came out of the Royal Commission. Everything from, you know, economic challenges, housing for women veterans, health, the whole lot's been sort of looked at through a gendered lens by the department. And myself and a couple of other women veterans were consulted on that piece of work, and a very comprehensive strategy was some really great recommendations has been produced due to the minister announcing on the 4th of September in 2025 that the Albanese government was going to get after all these issues affecting women veterans. And that work's been done. And I know that a strategy with some great recommendations in it have been produced. And we're yet to see that come out of the minister's office, despite lobbying and asking for it.
So almost a year later, that hasn't been publicly published as yet?
It hasn't been published. And I know, I can honestly say after 34 years in the military, I have heard so many times, you know, we got to this point and it's coming and it's coming, and then it just stops, and it's not good enough.
Lani LJ Keneally, Chair of Women Veterans Australia. Now, a spokesperson for the Department of Veterans Affairs says the department is, quote, working hard to process claims as quickly as possible while making sure decisions are accurate and based on the right information. We made a record number of decisions on veterans' health conditions in 2025-26, resulting in more treatment, services and support being provided to veterans and families of veterans than ever before. The spokesperson also says the department paid for over 3,000 gynecological services with a value exceeding $1 million. Thank you so much for listening to all of those interviews from Sally Sara, produced by the Radio National Breakfast team. The Breakfast Wrap was today produced by Kathy Van Extel. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories and interviews from here and around the world.